Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. As always, we want you to stay bulletproof. We want to thank you for making us a top 10 podcast now on Apple. And the only problem with that is it's not because it's my voice. It's because I have amazing guests. And today I have yet another amazing guest, and I'm so excited to speak to her. She is the founder of the podcast Murderish and so much more. Jamie Rice, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Steve. Really nice to meet you. Happy to be here.
Likewise. And I want to get to so many different things. So I'm going to kind of go over the map because I'm excited to speak to you. Now, Jamie, what even inspired you to start Murderish? And is it something that you were always passionate about, or is something happened and it turned you into a true crime? What was your whole inspiration between Murderish?
It was both. So basically, since I was a teenager, my mom and I have been like following trials on court TV and just had a real interest in it. I was reading books on serial killers. I've just always been interested in like the psychology of it. But then when I was 18, something very traumatic happened. And long story short, there was a man that, unbeknownst to me, saw me at the grocery store, followed me home, and actually entered my bedroom. And I caught him in my bedroom when I was 18 years old, living with my mom in Redlands, California. And that was really what got me more interested in not just the psychology of true crime, but also just from a women's safety standpoint of like, wow, it made me so aware that women and everybody, you know, can be a target anywhere, anytime. Doesn't matter if you're in a pretty neighborhood, you're not in a pretty neighborhood. It really does not matter. And so that made me very like hyper aware from a women's safety standpoint and a justice standpoint, because basically to skip to the end of it, you know, we never caught the guy. There's this whole story behind it, and there's an episode on my podcast.
So wait a minute.
You
So,
can listen to the whole story. It's
so not to cut you. Wait, I'm sorry, Jamie. So not to cut you off. This guy followed you home, went into your home, and went into your room.
Yes, I caught him as he was walking in through the sliding glass door.
And what, did he get freaked out and leave? Or did he encounter you? What was that?
He didn't. I got very lucky. The moment that I walked in my bedroom, he was not expecting me to. He thought he was going to sneak in, hide in my closet or hide under my bed. I had like this day bed at the time. But lucky for me, somebody's watching over me that day. I walked in literally as he's walking in. So I actually startled him. He did not expect to see me, and it threw him off his game.
Wow.
And I yelled at him, and he tried to make up an excuse right on the fly. He says, he's stumbling on his words. And he says, my cat, I think my cat. Yeah.
What was he
he goes,
say?
I think my cat came into your bedroom.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, his cat came into my bedroom.
God.
So I cussed him out, and my mom came running in once she realized I was in trouble. She had a gun. My mom's always packing heat. Like, she's a little badass. She comes running in with her gun, and he's already bolting out the door, jumps over the hedge, and runs back to his car. And he gets away, never to be found. We called the cops. They did an investigation. And unfortunately, he got away. So I don't know his status as of today, but this was, I'm 47 now. That happened when I was 18.
Well, I'm going to say, being a former police officer, he doesn't seem like he's too cunning or intelligent to have not, if not got caught, stop what he's doing. Maybe you stopped him dead, and then maybe he never do it again, because, you know, to come up with an excuse like that, I think my cat's in your room. So
yeah,
I don't mean to laugh.
Pretty wild.
I make light of it.
Oh,
at
it's
all.
Funny. Yeah.
But that's
no, it is
pretty
pretty funny.
nuts.
It's nuts, and I don't think
So
about it often,
so
but when I do, I think like, holy shit, like he could have attacked me. That's what was it? What else was he going to do in my room? And I really, truly, when I'm thinking about it now, and I have spoken with many experts along the way, and we've all come to the conclusion mostly that he saw me at the grocery store. He was not expecting or planning to follow a girl home. He saw a target. It prompted something nefarious inside of him. He followed me, and he didn't have a plan. He just knew he saw somebody. He had an unnatural urge. He went into my bedroom, and he didn't have a plan. And that's very clear by the cat story. And you know, he could have lunged at me. When I caught him, it threw him so off his game that he didn't even think to go, well, let me attack her. He would have overpowered me. But he was so scared by being caught, he didn't want to be caught. He wanted to catch me by surprise. And he didn't, and I
Right.
ruined his plan, and it threw everything off. Thank goodness for me.
Well, you know what, you know what's funny too, Jamie. I just, I went to a play like 2 days ago on the Summer of Sam, right? And make a long short of it was he had an MO of killing brunettes, right? So his last victim was blonde. But what happened is the gentleman she was with, I happened to meet while he was there at the show. And what happened was they were kind of making it again, young. They were young and they were making out in the park and doing all those little, hormones, all that stuff. And they saw him, right? David Berkowitz. And basically, they're like, come on, let's go. They went in the car and it was like a horror movie. It's like, don't go in the basement. They ended up making out again. And then he came up and killed him. And it just shows you how one decision like this, one split decision changes. So he ended up, so she, she got a, I don't want to say it for lack of a better thing, but she got her brains blown out. He got shot in the head, but he survived. He's still around. He lived a normal life. But all they had to do was press on the gas and life would be different as we know it. The reason why I'm even saying that is going back to you. If he was a little more intelligent or he did have a plan, things could have gone south quickly. You know what I mean? And thank God. And now you're here today be almost because of it. So it's almost like that was meant to happen. You know what I mean? Is that weird?
No, it's not weird because it taught me so much. I mean, it sounds cheesy, but it's like I even listening to true crime podcasts for over the last, 8 to 10 years, I've learned how to keep myself and my family and my loved ones safer. That incident, I'm so glad it happened. And I'm very thankful that I didn't get attacked, obviously, because I don't know what trajectory that would have put me on or if I would still be even alive to talk about it today. But I'm so glad it happened because I was so naive up to that point. And Steve, like, there were red flags. I had seen him walking on the sidewalk before he went into my bedroom, but I was an 18-year-old, inexperienced girl. Nothing bad had ever happened. I only thought really bad things, terrible things happened to people on the news. Like I was just that blasé
No,
about it, right?
absolutely.
Because, right, you don't know. I'm just
Absolutely.
so inexperienced. But that incident taught me that your gut instinct is there for a reason, your intuition.
That's right.
I had intuition that night, but I ignored it. And it allowed him the opportunity to go in the bedroom because if I back up on the story a little bit, not to get fully into it, I did see him walking on the sidewalk, glaring at me, not in a weird way, but a very unnatural way, a very scary way that I knew something was off and I should have never gotten out of my car. I should have never walked into my apartment and essentially showed him which apartment was mine. But this is Jamie, 18-year-old inexperienced teenager. I ignored so many red flags and instincts that day, and I will never, never, never do that again. And that's the best lesson for anybody. It's not even just like gut instinct because your gut isn't your brain. It's literally like your intuition is telling you something. If it seems like it's off, it most likely is. So listen to that. Even if it
Right.
makes you look weird at the time, or whatever you've got to do, scream, get out of there, hit the gas, say something weird so people notice, like anything, but follow your gut for sure.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And again, there's no more truth than that. Like I said, I was a police officer for NYPD for about 7 years before I got injured. And so many stories for so many, crime scenes I went to. If one person would have just went left or right, instead of right, or I would say at least not, I won't say 50%, but at least 30% of them could have went a different way. You know what I mean? So again, it's almost like oddly enough, it became your calling in a sense
No,
because
it did.
this kind of woke you up to the world, eh? And now, and again, and you made a pretty successful, career out of all this. Because of that, right?
Yeah,
So,
truly.
once that happens, again, so now you get jump, you hyper focus to this. And a lot of people love true crime. I didn't even realize I was doing a different type of podcast. I was like, bro, you're a cop, you're this, you're that, doing true crime. So, it's amazing how many people are into this. And once you started, was there a certain area that you focused on? Like some people focus on serial killers, some people focus on unsolved. Is there one thing that turns you on? I don't say turn you on, for lack of a better
Sure.
term, turns
Yeah,
you
no,
on
I
more than
get it.
something else?
Yeah, there were two
What
things.
stimulates you?
I initially started telling my own personal stories because oddly enough, maybe I need to write a book someday. I have had so many true crime brushes, like wild brushes with like I was in a bank, an armed takeover robbery at a bank that I worked for. These two guys came in with guns. I survived that. I had the guy followed me home into my bedroom and I caught him. I was the jury foreman on a first degree murder trial. So there's all these things like the true crime stories. And so my first couple of episodes were my own personal stories to say what I've been through in the realm of true crime. But then I started focusing geographically. There were always cases in Southern California, which is where I'm born and raised and still live today, that I wanted to know more about. So I went and researched those stories and put those out as like my first few episodes because, and I still to this day sort of lean towards Southern California cases, but I've covered international cases, cases all over the US. But it was mostly
Yes, sure.
geographic. Yeah. And now today, I just mostly the most of the cases I cover are listener submitted. So I have, my audience will DM me or email me, and I keep a like a Google sheet, a list of cases that they want me to cover. And so I kind of do that now.
Well, what's the one case that you covered that either blew you away or that it stood out from any other case? If I said, what is the, I know, again, just bringing it back to me a second. If you told me, Steve, or asked me, hey, Steve, what is the craziest job you ever went on as a cop or a detective? I know exactly what I would tell you. So is there one that Jamie would say, they're all crazy, but this is the one? What would that be for Jamie?
It's hands down the Gabriel Fernandez case out of Palmdale, California. This little boy, not to go too into detail, was essentially starved, tortured, abused so badly by his biological mother and her boyfriend that it ultimately they killed him. And it's the worst. I almost can't think about it sometimes because as a parent, it's so triggering. It made me stop wanting to cover cases with kids because selfishly, for my own mental health, it is a struggle, right? But what happened to him is absolutely the worst of the worst. I cannot think of another case that affected me more. That poor little boy, and he was failed by not only his parents, but by social workers, law enforcement, like it's like the system, just everybody failed him. And it led ultimately to his slow and painful, awful murder at the hands of his mother and her boyfriend.
And you know how many HCS cases there are that they overlook, either the signs or the red flags, and then obviously something happens, and then all of a sudden now they're back, now it takes somebody to get one of these poor kids to get killed, and then everything gets changed, and it's, because shit rolls downhill, they want to start changing.
Right.
But again, it's a shame, and we had talked about animals, right? Off camera, offline, and how much better I think animals are than people sometimes. You wouldn't catch any animal, pick an animal to do that to their own child or their
Never.
own cub or their own. It's amazing.
No,
It's
I
crazy.
always
What?
say, like, when you and I were talking offline, like, animals never disappoint me. My pets have never disappointed me. They always are there for me with like love and comfort and nurturing and empathy, like all the things that I wish every human possessed, but human beings, on the other hand, and I am somebody who's a glass half full type of person. I like to believe that most of society is good. I still believe that. Sometimes that's hard, and that thought is challenged. But animals are pure. And again, I have to give trigger warnings. If I cover a case about kids, and something bad happens to an animal, I always give a trigger warning because I know how deeply people love animals, and myself included. I've got my little baby in the background, one of my dogs. But yeah, I mean, I just, it's awful. Animals are so pure, just like children, and nothing, it should all just be like rainbows and sunshine for them, but yet it's not. And that's so unfortunate.
No, and no matter what kind of day you had, no matter how low you are on a totem pole, right? No much how much money you make, what a piece of crap you are, what a great person, whatever. You come home, they get so excited to see you, right? It's just
Yes,
an amazing thing. It's
it is.
that's what you call true love. True, to the 10th power. So
Absolutely.
there's no, right? There's no, something behind it. It's just pure. So
Yes.
now I had asked you something earlier. I had asked you a question about how, you do your research on the cases and stuff. And you had mentioned obviously a lot of people send stuff in. What is your like so I send something in to you. What st what structure or what stands out to you if somebody sends a case to you? I'm sure you get a lot, so you do you cipher through? Do you have some assistant or how do you pick one out over the other, so to speak?
Yeah, I do have two researcher writers that work with me now, and they're amazing. They do such quality work. But basically, I always give it the cursory review to number one, make sure there's enough information to tell the story completely. But also, like, I look for an angle of like, does this story need more eyes and ears on it? Okay, that's a big reason to cover it. Maybe it's unsolved. Maybe there was a misjustice. Maybe that, there's just still more to it that needs to be found. Maybe it's a story that maybe it's been widely reported and covered, but I have an interesting angle on it that I think the public ought to hear. So maybe that's a reason to cover it. So there's various reasons why I would choose one story over other. And also too, I have to keep my own mental health in check. So it's like there are just certain stories I don't want to tap into. I'll hold them for later once I'm like anything involving kids and dogs, just like we said. I mean, sometimes I have to hold off. But if it is a case like Gabriel Fernandez, I didn't want to cover it. And in fact, I knew about it for years before I covered it, but I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole because it's like, how am I going to do this without just breaking down? But I was so outraged by the systematic, letdown of this boy. And things need to change. I thought that I needed to just put it out there and get more eyes and ears on it, even though it is a solved case. I wasn't attempting to solve it. I was attempting to get these points out there and not to rage bait everybody, to get everybody on board with, hey, these things happen and it needs to stop. So there's just various reasons why I might cover a story one over the other. And then once I do my cursory review, I will, I used to do all my own research and writing for the first couple of years, and then it just became too much with my full-time job. And now I have my researcher writers. I'll hand the case over to them. They'll send it back to me, a full-bodied script, factually written in order. Like they're so talented. And then I have to go through it and kind of like make my own changes and tell it in my own voice. And if there's information I think is missing, I'll go back to them and give them my notes. So there's a whole process to it, but we've kind of got it down to a really good science. I've worked with these same writers for a long time.
Now, here's a question for you off the cuff. Most of the true crime, doing my due diligence and not being in this sector that long so far, maybe about 2 or 3 months. Why do you think most true crime podcasters do not come from law enforcement?
Oh, maybe it's because law enforcement has been, I don't want to sound crass about it, but you've been there,
No,
done that.
I want to hear your answer.
I'm thinking like you've been there, done that. This was your life for however many decades. You lived it. It's traumatic. It's sad. It's depressing. It's all these things. And it's almost like maybe why you just don't want to, like, it's why go on a podcast and like revisit it. Maybe you don't want to revisit it for your own mental health. Maybe that's why.
No,
But I
sure.
also think there's a curiosity that we have as lay people. We haven't been through it, so we want to explore it more. And that's why we start a podcast. Like we have that curiosity, having not been in the trenches like you were. So I don't know. What are your
Well, no,
thoughts?
I think no, and I think you're right because I actually just had a former FBI agent on, female. And we started talking and she was telling me about all, crazy cases she worked. And it was one case she had worked on that, somebody got kidnapped in the family and they ended up getting killed. And she was there during the whole negotiation and the whole nine. And as she was telling the story, she was actually breaking down. And now she's retired about 12, 15 years. So this wasn't, this wasn't stay, I could tell when somebody, As she was there, as she was telling me every detail, she was right back there. And I mean, by the time she was done telling the story, she broke down. So again, I think you hit on something where that could absolutely be it. You did it. I've been there, done that. I'm good. I'm on. And there's some cops that I worked with. Listen, I could be a cop, which I was, obviously I could be a cop. I was a cop. As soon as I took off my uniform, I was done. You know what I mean? I hang up my locker away and I'm done. I'm not a cop anymore. And there's some guys that cops 24/7, they hang out with cops, they go on, they take it home with them and start drinking and it's different personalities, but I saw those type of guys too, the 24/7 cops, and it's not fun. So yeah, I
And I
think
think
that's a
that
great answer.
Well, and I think that this type of, your line of work, I mean, everybody's affected by everything, traumatic events differently. Like you, sounds like you were able to, not to put words in your mouth, but sort of go home, put it on a shelf, and then put your hat on the next day. And okay, now I'm a cop. This is my life. But when I go home, I'm a whatever family man. I'm a this, I'm a that, but
Oh, I was
I.
actually, I worked at, you want to hear something funny, Jamie? I actually worked at Chipton. I worked at Chippendales when I was a cop.
Okay, so you
True
completely
story,
I love
pre-social media.
that.
So I wouldn't worry about, I would take off my uniform to go worry about, putting on a show that night. So
Yes.
yeah, I think that's helped me a lot. I think that helped me a lot. You know
Yeah,
what
that probably helped you
I
escape. That helped you. So I go home.
mean?
So
So,
okay,
probably.
I'm not a Chippendales dancer, but like I go home, I watch my, and literally everybody's like, "Oh, have you seen this true crime series or that?" And I do watch true crime documentaries, of course, but I'm immersed in true crime almost every single day now that this is my full-time gig, true crime podcasting for years now. I go home and watch trash TV because I want to shut my mind off. I watch The Housewives, like, because I want to not think. I want to see nothing sad. I just want to see ladies going at each other a little bit, going on expensive trips, putting on a cute outfit. Like, it helps me not think about all the darkness that I am choose to
Mindless,
immerse
right?
myself in every day. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, we're moving quick. Again, I knew this was going to happen today because I knew I was going to enjoy this. I knew it was going to go like this. So before we start winding down, I'm going to give you some rapid fire questions.
Cool.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Can you? All right, let's
Oh,
do it. So,
I'm ready.
what is has been your okay? Let's go. What has been your craziest fan encounter?
Oh gosh. Actually, I was at a Mexican restaurant and I was in the stall and I was talking to my 12-year-old daughter. She wasn't 12 at the time, but she was outside the stall waiting for me. And the lady in the stall next to me says, "You're Jamie Rice." Out of nowhere. Like, I didn't even know, like, this woman, she was in the stall next to me. We're both using the restroom. Out of nowhere, I hear this voice appeared. She says, "You're Jamie Rice, murderish." And I'm like, hi. And I'm literally using the restroom. And my daughter's like, "Okay, what is going on here?" So, long story short, she recognized my voice. And we went and washed our hands, and it was
Funny.
totally cool. She wasn't like creepy or anything, but she was just bold enough to go, "I recognize your voice. You're Jamie Rice from Murderish." And she was very
That's cool.
sweet.
That's
And
awesome.
that was kind of a funny, yeah, in the bathroom stall at a Mexican
And you probably got
restaurant
some
after a couple
street cred
mugs.
with your daughter. And you probably got
Oh,
you
for
some
sure.
street cred with your daughter,
Oh, because
right?
you're right. Because
So,
as parents, we have to find any way to be cool with our kids. So in that moment, her mom was kind of cool.
cool. That's cool. That's right. Because my daughter's 13, and I have twins that are 11, boys and girls. So yeah, I'm in the uncool dad stage. So,
Oh, aren't we all?
yes, most underrated case. Most underrated case you ever worked.
Oh my gosh, the most underrated case. That is a tough one. Oh gosh. Underrated case.
This is rapid. Let's go. Yeah,
Yeah, I
first thing comes
know.
to your head.
Shit. Well, I can't, all the cases that are on top of mind, they're pretty viral right now that I've been working on. So, I don't know. So sorry to disappoint you, but I don't know what an underrated
Okay,
case.
no, that's right. We got a
Shit.
couple more. We got a couple
Yeah.
more.
Yeah. Maybe
You could
it's
always
my
come
own
back
experience. Maybe it's
and tell
actually,
me.
maybe it's my own experience being a juror on a first degree murder trial, the case of Courtney Arvizu, who was murdered out here where I live in Southern California in the Los Angeles area. Her case got no play at all, which was really the reason I started my podcast, was to tell her story. Yeah, maybe it's the case of Courtney Arvizu. I think that it should have gotten more press. And I also think that it's just a story of, you know, it's domestic violence. Domestic violence against women is really an epidemic all over the world. And I do think that those cases need, we need to try and lower the statistic, you know, of domestic violence. So I would say that hers is pretty underrated.
Okay. We got to move on these. Dream guest or collaborator, other than me.
Shoot, I met that goal today. You know, at this point, I like to keep it light and fluffy. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say Snoop Dogg. I think Snoop would be fun.
Awesome.
And he had,
oh,
yeah,
wow.
He would be
Snoop,
fun.
He's like
and,
everywhere. Snoop.
Yeah, and I have questions. I have questions about his murder case. I mean, I covered it on my podcast, but I'd love to talk to the man himself. And I do have some questions, and not all of them would be probably ones that he would want me to ask. But yeah, maybe Snoop.
All right. Biggest lesson learned from doing Murderish.
Biggest lesson learned from doing Murderish is that tell the story with empathy and understand that every time I turn my mic on and tell somebody else's story, this is a murder victim, and this is somebody who has people who love them and they are listening, and tell it with respect and for the right reasons and with empathy and factually.
Very good. Last question. One case that you love to revisit or update?
Revisit or update? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a big person on, I get really pissed off about injustice, and this is going to sound whatever, but like the OJ Simpson case, the case of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman always pissed me off because the justice wasn't served on that. And it was so obvious who did it. And that person got to continue living their lives. And so maybe I'd like to revisit that one and put more of a period on it, because that one was just, it was a mess.
That I agree. And like I said, I could go over about 15 with you that I think you'd agree with, but
Sure.
we're up against it. And maybe we could do this again. I'd love to do that. How do people get in touch with you? If somebody wants to reach out, give you their story, or what is the best way to make that happen?
Yeah, the easiest way is through social media. I'm very, I'm on TikTok and Instagram, YouTube at Jamie on Air. That's J-A-M-I on Air. They can DM me there, or they can go to my website, murderish.com. Shoot me an email through there.
Awesome. And once again, I really want to thank you for coming on. It was such an enjoyable experience. I hate these half hour things because they fly, because when I'm really into it, that's how I know I they fly. So once again, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody that's listening, we always tell you, as always, please stay bulletproof. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for making us and putting us in the position where we are, but we can always get higher. And again, I know it's not me. It's guests like Jamie Rice. If you dream, dream out loud. Stay bulletproof, and we'll see you next week.